welcome to the physics room. Thanks for coming along. After the opening, as always, I'm doing this along to the talk the next day, but it's going to have a nice full room. So we're just going to have, we're going to first hear from Ziggy and Paula, and then we'll hear from Michael and Zach after that. But it's a real pleasure to have a welcome Paula Booker and Ziggy Lever. And Paula's curated this project here that we're sitting in with Joanne Margaret Paul Films and Ziggy Lever's work. And she's going to talk us through a bit about the project, and it's a real pleasure to have had you come and work here at the physics room, and to have you here as well, so he's been really great. So thank you both for coming down, and should we give a warm welcome to these guys.
Thanks for being in this space, everybody, and for people who didn't have a chance to like see the works already, I'll just talk that through a little bit. So this is a moving image exhibition, and what I was really interested in thinking about was how moving image functions in gallery spaces and how we see and experience works. These works necessarily evolve like over time, and time spent in the work is the experience of the work. So I think it's really interesting how when you make video and watch video shows, you don't always get very much time. People come into a gallery and they don't always know how long it's going to take to see the work. You know, like if you go and see a sculptural work or have a work outside, you could spend as much time in front of each work as you choose, so you're kind of on your own time. Whereas when you're in a video show, you have time kind of meted out by the work, and how much time you give to the work kind of decides how much of the work you get, you know, to experience. And I think it's a thing that often, like, you don't get to have the most amazing experience with the video art, and that, like, sometimes you kind of get a bit cheated by how much time you've got in the gallery or what the work can kind of give to you. So, yeah, I mean, that's where I've kind of been coming from. I've been thinking about how works, like, affect viewers and how kind of the sensory perception of video kind of can take you back into kind of memory or time or place, and thinking about those ideas. It's kind of like the core of this show. That's why I called it Thinking Feeling. It's like thinking about feeling and feeling about thinking. Everyone loves a pun. And so I'm working with a live artist, Ziggy, here, who's been really wonderful and it's been a really collaborative process. And the other artist in the show is unfortunately no longer with us. She died about 10 years ago, and she made a lot of films, she made about 40 films. It kind of it's actually the largest collection of like experimental moving image that was, you know, the first kind of large body of work that was ever created by a woman or by anybody. It's like a lot of works, about 40 works made in the 70s and 80s, mainly on 8mm. One thing I've learned with curating her films is that she had a really bad camera. anyway, while we're here, and you can see this countdown happening, I just want to bring our attention to that. One thing that we wanted to think about the works was thinking about like machine time as opposed to real time and human time. So I really like wanted there to be this kind of space between the works where you would like come into the work kind of from the beginning, like you would know that the work was starting, you would get a chance to like kind of think, oh, like, okay, here's this work and here I am, and you know, what am I gonna see here? This is Anna Wana, a work of hers, which was made, this is Joanne Margaret Paul, of course. She made films where she lived and she shot works locally. This is a kind of a landscape study of the Amoana Peninsula, and there's been a lot of change since the time that this film was made. You know, it's been industrialized with mining and smelters and various things. So when you see this film, you realize it's a landscape because you can see, you know, rocks and seashore and stuff, but you don't actually see the typical elements on landscape. Like you don't often see a horizon line. Your view is always like foreshortened, and it's this idea of like a really close look. There's a really constant thread through all of her works, whether she's like looking at domestic subjects in her own home or things that she was doing or her children or kind of various things. You always kind of get this very foreshortened view, and I've been kind of thinking a lot about how this works, and how this kind of makes a viewer kind of connect in with like really what she's seeing and how she was seeing it. So maybe that's enough of an introduction from me. Mm.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If you're using her images, are they copyrighted, or do you have to just acknowledge her?
No, I've been working with her estate, so I've been working with like her family to possible. And then Circuit are actually distributing her work, so they're working with curators who are interested in her work to kind of make sure that the work is shown in a, you know, in the way that makes it look the best that it can, and you know, that it's transferred correctly. And you know, when something's been shot on film and it has to be digitally transferred, you have a lot of opportunities for things to kind of go wrong. So they're having oversight over that, and the Film Archive has been looking after the films, like, so they have her whole collection of films, and they've been digitizing them and restoring them and so forth. So they have that legacy, like Kaitiaki, of the films, and so it kind of has a contemporary interaction.
And one more question, just in a time frame, is this before the massacre?
So this is 1982, and I was just going to say one more thing. I think it's quite interesting when you have, when you're working with an artist who's not with you, and kind of speaking to the works and speaking about the works. I wrote a lot, because we had a lot of goes with this show. It's going to come out in about 3 weeks. If anybody's interested, there'll be copies here available. But so I wrote a lot about her work and, like, you know, spent a lot of time with each work and really tried to get inside of it. And then in the catalogue, Ziggy writes about his own work, and I didn't write about his work. And I, you know, I'm wary about speaking for her, and I like to kind of, like, not describe the works too much, like, in this conversation, but kind of, like, more describe my kind of interaction with them. And in the case of Ziggy's work, like, leave any kind of tangential coincidences between the work. His work is not a response to her work, even though her work was created earlier. I put the two artists together, and Ziggy hadn't seen Joanna's work before, and so it was an interesting kind of confluence.
I guess that's something that was really interesting for me in doing this this exhibition, is that you know, how do you kind of operate in a way that isn't responding in some way to the other artist, and who gets to speak, you know, for deceased artists as well. I think these are really interesting politics around the exhibition and the exhibition format. And so, that's another thing. What I'm thinking about.
So this is, now, with the way that we've done the works as well, you see a work by Ziggy and then a work by Joanna. Now, this is one of Ziggy's works, which is shot this year.
And that should start playing shortly. So, it's actually, maybe whilst this is playing, I can talk a bit about some of my thinking around driving and around memory. So I'm quite interested in what the sort of mental state that you go into when you're driving. It's a kind of, it's like, you know, you're aware of the world in a particular way, you know, like you're not kind of focused on the things that are immediately zooming past you so much as looking into the distance about where you're going to go next. And I often look in the mirror when driving or when in cars and think about the kind of different speeds that are going past you, and being able to watch, like, with mirrors to sort of different speeds of the world at the same time. Because obviously when you're looking into the distance, how you perceive the world is coming towards you a lot slower than when you're looking at the side or even at the back, it's kind of like a faster speed. So I was thinking about that. And also the idea of you're in a vehicle, you know, like you're kind of this point which is relatively still, but the world is moving towards you. And thinking about that in terms of like a video framework where we're sitting on chairs and we kind of watch the video screen come towards us, or the light of the screen sort of virtually come towards us. I think there's a really interesting correlation there between traditional sort of Pacific navigation ideas. So there's this really great text by Local Time which talks about the difference. They call it live reckoning and dead reckoning. And so dead reckoning would be like a Western model where you choose points, like islands, or and move towards them. And live reckoning, you are still, and the stars are fixed as well, and the world moves under and through you. So thinking about that kind of change of positioning of what is active in the space, I think that has a kind of an interesting relationship to video and to particularly these sorts of shots, like is a camera a vehicle, you know, for your mind to move through space.
Would you like one of the Ziggy and I had lots of conversations, and one of the reasons that I kind of was started interacting with his work, is there was a lot of crossover in the kind of theory that we were reading, and so he's a PhD candidate at the moment, so you can read all the books. Just ask you questions about them. I've finished with studies now. But do you want to talk a little bit about like Bergsonian and duration? Because I think like duration is a really interesting concept for like video, for film, but also like for life and how we kind of experience like incidents or how we experience like memories. So Henri Bergson is somebody who we've both been reading. Maybe just talk a little bit about this show?
Sure, yeah. I guess Bergson's a, if you don't know, like a turn of the century philosopher who was a mathematician and assumed a lot of prize. But he thought a lot about this idea of duration, which has been translated by other theorists into the idea of becoming, like Deleuze, particularly. So duration is, I suppose, the movement of difference over time. So, and it's a description of you know, the process of time unfolding in the world. But it's also talked about as a multiplicity. So there's not just one duration that is affecting everyone. Or if there is, there's actually, everyone has an individual duration as well. And then there's many durations within that that kind of inflate and conflict and happen at the same time. So we're not talking about different speeds in the mirror work there. It, one way of understanding that might be duration. Yeah, and so thinking about, as Paul was saying before, with the countdown timer, the difference between mechanical time and experience time, it's quite interesting. I find that it's like almost another artwork in the show, the countdown timer videos that Paul has contributed. She shot, if you don't mind me disclosing, she shot the video off the screen of the countdown timer in the bathroom in the dark of the apartment that you're staying
in.
Yesterday. So it has this kind of immediacy in terms of time, and in terms of computer time. And that's something that I'm really interested in, is like being able to respond with the show in the immediate present in some way, as well as kind of drawing from past and
So duration is really interesting. One analogy that I heard about duration was the description of like an Aboriginal, like Australian understanding of duration. There's this idea of like not just this person, this human being, which exists like in this time space, has a lifetime, however unfortunately short it would be at the moment. But like understanding like this kind of dream time where you connect with the land, you connect with the woman narratives and all the stories, and like that there's this way of kind of interacting with yourself as a kind of like almost like as a kind of star being, your time is connected up with the land and with the rocks, which are, you know, tens and millions and thousands of years old, and that's all continuous time. That things are not like segmented into these little chunks. Like duration is this kind of understanding of being and becoming rather than measuring. So yeah, that's what I mean by duration. It's not by measuring time, but by kind of trying to relate to time. And so this is another work by Joanna Paul, who this is shot in Thorndon, like when the bypass kind of motorway was coming through. There's more seats if anyone wants to come and sit down. this is called Motorway, and it was shot in Thorndon when the motorway was being constructed. It's another landscape, but it's got this kind of like varying effect where she puts like different textures and different kind of formal patterns together. And I don't want to go too much into describing that, but I think something like this might relate quite interestingly to the work that Ziggy's made, where he asked a bunch of people to come out and shoot films in a local environment here and kind of just like be in the landscape and kind of relate with it.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about that?
Oh yeah, so that's this kind of projection over here, which is called Template for Local Interactions, and I call it a template because thinking about it as this kind of, it's like a strategy for making, which then you would respond to tactically to actually craft something out of it. And so, again, thinking about wanting to kind of be really responsive to the way things are made immediately. Like, so this footage was all shot on Thursday, which there was like maybe 2 hours of footage, and it's shot on mobile phones. So I've collected these mobile phones, which I've responded to.
Do they work there?
Well, yeah, these are like old school ones as well. So they're not smartphones. It's like the last of the keypad based phones, little Alcatels.
Like cheap little phones. Yeah. And like sound recorders and video recorders. And those of us who went on the walk took a mixture of photographs or sound recordings if we wanted to, or video, just to kind of be in the space.
Mm. And text as well. You respond to them that way. And so for this work in particular, I think upon realizing, there's actually another work that is made when it's cut together. It's like one kind of event that happened and is documented as produced documents. And then this other work that is being kind of crafted out of that as a cooperative work. So I find all those sort of politics quite interesting about collaboration and cooperation. So, how do you work together but separately?
Mm-hmm.
So we were all in kind of separate areas.
It was like a busy day, and we just arrived in Christchurch that morning, and I almost thought about like not going because I had to send some emails and edit some text, and then I was like, oh my god, I could spend like 2 hours just walking in the gardens and like looking at everything, and like really just like, just, looking at these films which are all about looking, and it's just like, oh god, don't get all wrapped up in like this front brain, or back brain, go into the kind of the creative brain, And so I felt like it was this amazing kind of good feeling which came out of it.
Mm.
And I know that other participants had a sense of kind of.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we can ask Adrian was there. So.
Yeah, I was the same. I was really busy that day, but it was interesting as time itself actually shifted from having to do that process. It would be rapid, mind-based, da-da-da-da-da, and suddenly it became this total sensory experience within that space, which actually also, because I've lived here so long and had these particular associated memories with particular parts of the park, it brings all that other stuff into it as well. So, you're dealing with the multiple time frames that happen, but then just around
this was
in
particular spots.
Yeah,
it's really,
and the shift between the start and the end was a really satisfying process.
Mm. Yeah, as I said, there was heaps of footage that was recorded because, if I gave everyone multiple phones and then there's 2 hours.
And sometimes we would like set them up. We had like that was $9 phone, so you could just kind of I set mine up in the kind of knee of a tree and like watch the Avon with the boat. There was like these ducks just kind of really going for it, like, and it could feed and frenzy on the maybe with acorns or something. And so I was like, you guys do your thing, and I'll just like pop that there, and then I went for a walk with my other phone, and so then I was like, you kind of get this shifting of time, like the time that you're not in a space and what's going on there.
Yeah.
What about the time of the technology? $9 phones?
Yeah.
Things on his own? But this woman went from the 70s, I don't know how much, $1,000 camera thing. You needed to do some 5 week clicks just to learn.
Yeah.
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 And what they record on it. It's on a phone.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting actually to point out, because I was thinking about these phones as kind of like, are they modern 8mm cameras, because of the frame rate that they record at.
Yeah.
But then also thinking about film as this other physical sort of entity, which you can, if you want to understand the present, I think you can really understand it by looking at a film strip. Because it's recording time between events as well as these kind of snapshots of events. If you think
So it's like unstilled time, and it's all the linear, the repetition of each frame kind of like repeats time in a linear way. It also catches it in nothing.
Yeah, and you can look at any frame and see the before and the after. But actually, in between those frames, there's time that's unfolded as well, because the limitations of any technology is that they can't record everything properly. You know, there's always, that's kind of the way that framework rate works.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about, you know, like, well, you know, can we get a better sense of reality from this footage than from that, or than from like an HD film?
Yeah.
You know, like, how is it different?
Yeah, the more pixels,
know?
The more information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think actually that ties into maybe talking about memory and talk a little bit about memory as well. Because before, when you asked the Adam Moana film, if it was before the massacre, I mean, how we think about that film is so different to how we would think about it when it was made, because of the history that's happened afterwards. And I guess, you know, maybe that's one of the roles of museums and galleries in some senses, to try and conserve the past, or to think about structuring a narrative around the past that can shed light on certain events. But what do we really know? You know, within our memories, can we really trust them? Or do, you know, what are we the experts on? Is it just right now, you know, this moment now, that we can really tell what's going on in the world? So, like, thinking about that, I started to research memory and the way that memory works. And memory is actually, you know, it's often talked about as this kind of storage device in the brain where you can access the past, right? But it's always being recreated in the present. Like, neurons are kind of fired, which make pathways, like walking through the long grass or walking a path through a park or the bush. The more that you walk down these paths, the more kind of trodden they become, and the easier it is to travel those paths again. And so there have been a recent scientific study which kind of suggests that actually the process of memory is happening in every single part of the brain at once, rather than being in kind of one singular.
Yeah, you're saying that where something happens in your memory and what happens, they're actually stored in two different parts of the brain that can be separated and potentially changed.
Well, yeah, with neuroscience, there's been recent developments where scientists have been able to affect the what memory or the where memory within the mice, which, you know, that research could be really useful for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, bipolar or epilepsy, because you can it's no longer associated with stimuli and response, it's associated with the sort of different neural pathways that are enacted. So I guess it's a bit heavy maybe, and I don't want to try and sound like I'm a like I'm a scientist, or so I really know what I'm talking about. I'm just drawing on these things.
Yeah, sure,
yeah.
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 Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, we did listen to Tim Holmes
more. Oh yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah.
I'm interested to maybe open it up
for
any other like questions about
the
exhibition or about the work.
What about the sound component?
Mm. Yeah, all of these are silent.
Yep.
Some of Ziggy's works have got sound, but this work is, I kind of like the way you can hear like the camera getting turned on and off, and like sort of rustling in the hand. Like it makes you kind of realise that somebody, like in a work like this, you know, the where you have more of a camera device, like an obvious camera device happening, you don't get to feel so much of the kind of human scale of the user. Whereas like, you know, when you're holding something, you feel like the length of someone's. You know, there's these shots where you have like these landscapes, which is such a typical kind of mobile camera footage. You're moving, the landscape's moving, and like you don't even get every frame because it's like a really low compression rate. So you get like information, you get this kind of crazy crossover.
Mm.
But it's kind of like slightly distracting as those clicking and bumping sounds are. I think they kind of put all of those like who shot the footage back into it. Whereas like I think with Joanna's work, you have this really interesting separation from the person looking and then the person receiving. But I think that these I think that one of the interesting things about her work is that there is this kind of like connection, like she really like gets you into like the way that she shoots her films. I think she really gets you into her view. I think that's for me that seems like a really big part of like that you kind of like and one of the things that I've been thinking about her work is that she does all these kind of very close-up shots for a kind of particular reason. Like, that, you know, normally in a film, like, say, a narrative film, or even in other kind of experiment film, you have various kinds of information, but hers is all, like, it's all really closely framed. And in narrative film, like, a close-up is kind of used as an engagement device, you know, the close-up of the person's face, the close-up of a tear rolling down somebody's cheek, or the look of shock on somebody's face, that's basically used as a connection device. It's called is it affect image?
Mm.
Yeah, so Deleuze would call that the affect image. And so basically what I think with her works is like, because they're all comprised of like all of these shots, like what happens when you have this kind of affect image, it tears you away from kind of space and time and kind of like right into that emotional situation. And with her, it's not a person, it's like a landscape. So it kind of like, it shears away like time and it shears away like place and it kind of puts you like right into this thing. Because of her work is like comprised of all of these close-ups, just one after the other, you're kind of like in this kind of constant state. Kind of in this constant like engaged state, like this kind of affective state. And I think that for me has been really interesting about her work. It's like one of her, I think it's a device that she used. And she was quite, another thing about her works is that they look like they could have just been shot on a mobile phone, like walking around on a sunny day. But she actually read a lot of film theory. She was really interested in Bresson and a lot of other filmmakers, and she involved herself in experimental film communities, and I think it's also really interesting to think about her work as coming from a cinematic position, but actually having this kind of art film. They work in an art film kind of environment now, like in this environment that we're in. Yeah, because you don't ever get like to see anything from the girl. Interested in like reading more about her work, I would encourage you to like get the publication that we're going to do.
Yeah.
Thanks both so much. I feel like we could talk so much further about this work, and it's a really great presentation. But we're on a tight schedule, so we should be doing it. So should we stand and maybe go into the space?
Yeah.
That was really nice. Cool. That was great.
Yeah, we could have talked for hours. We could.